cozy traditions feel good, especially this time of year. And that includes your fall makeup look. From lashes for days with liquid lash extension mascara to enhancing a smoky eye with your favorite shade of Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is your go-to for completing every fall look. Whether you want a simple, just gotta get out the door routine or fall glam that wows at all your favorite festivities, you'll always look and feel radiant with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. Complete your fall look. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/cozy.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Cold Case Friday on the True Crime Never Sleeps show. As always, I'm your host, Larry Lace. Today, we're diving into the unsolved murder of Jack Wheeler. Before we do that, give me all your theories and thoughts on this case in the comments section below. And with that, let's dive right in, shall we? On the 31st, December 2010, a body was discovered at the Cherry Island landfill. The body is quickly identified as that of John Jack Wheeler III, a West Point graduate and former White House aide. The death is ruled a homicide, and a vigorous investigation follows, but produces few leads and no answers. The case becomes complicated when a neighbor reports a burglary at Jack's home, and an investigation into an arson attack across the street leads back to Jack. The case takes a bizarre turn when police examine CCTV footage of Jack in the days preceding his death. So the question, of course, what happened to Jack Wheeler? So who was Jack Wheeler? One of the important things to understand about this case is that Jack Wheeler was not your average man. A West Point graduate and Vietnam veteran, Jack went on to graduate from Harvard and Yale. He worked for several different presidential administrations and was a White House aide during the Bush administration. He had extensive contacts in the government and was currently working in defense security as a contractor for the minor corporation working in the area of cybersecurity. Given his illustrious career, there has been some speculation that his death was a contract killing, a targeted hit. Indeed, this is what his family believed happened. However, there has been no indication or evidence that his previous or current occupation was connected to his death. Another important factor in this case is that Jack had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. His wife reported that he was disciplined with taking his medication and stated that he could get a little manic, but usually was just normal old Jack. The first twist in the case comes when police at the landfill contact Jack's local police force, the Newcastle Police Department, to inform them of the discovery of the body. At that time, Newcastle City Police are currently en route to Jack's house to respond to reports of a burglary after a neighbor raised the alarm. The report of a burglary at Jack's home casts a dark shadow over the discovery of the body, and police immediately suspect foul play. This will become an important factor later on in this case. The second important twist in the case comes from the fact that while all this is going on, a third investigation is underway at the house across the street from Jack's home. The house, which is currently under construction, has been subject to an arson attack with somebody letting off smoke bombs. There was little damage, but when investigators comb the scene, they discover a mobile phone which turns out to belong to Jack Wheeler. So there are three investigations occurring at the same time: the discovery of the body, the reported burglary, and the arson investigation. When Jack's phone is lost at the house under construction, investigators are unable to rely on it to help build a timeline of what Jack did in the days and hours before his death. In the absence of the phone data, detectives were forced to rely on CCTV footage and a number of witness sightings. The sparse bits of CCTV footage available of Jack are haunting and mysterious, and they form an important part of this bizarre case. The account of what happened leading up to Jack's death can get a little complicated, and the best way to communicate the information is to draw a timeline of the events. The significant time period in this case is the last week of December 2010. Jack's body was found on New Year's Eve, Friday the 31st, and the timeline begins exactly 1 week earlier, on Christmas Eve, Friday the 24th. On Christmas Eve, Jack arrived in New York by train to spend Christmas with his family. His wife and stepdaughter remembered him to have been in good spirits. On Tuesday, December 28th, Jack leaves New York and travels to Washington, D.C. by train for work. This is much to his wife's annoyance, as she hadn't expected him to return to work so soon. Jack works for around half a day, then at 5:30 catches a train to Newcastle, Delaware, where Jack has a second home. Jack returns to his second home in Newcastle, Delaware. At 11 p.m. that evening, there is an arson incident at the house across the street. Jack's phone is later found in the garden. The next day is Wednesday the 29th, and at 9:31 a.m., Jack sends an email to work stating that his wallet, phone, and work ID badge have been stolen. He does not report the theft to the police or his wife. Jack is now without a phone, so investigators rely on CCTV footage and witness sightings from here on out. At 6:42, Jack is spotted entering his local pharmacy. According to the pharmacist, he was asking for a ride to Wilmington. This is where he had parked his car before traveling by train to New York for Christmas. A couple of patrons in the store at the time offered to give him a lift to Wilmington. The next time we see Jack is on CCTV footage inside a parking garage in Wilmington, and his condition has deteriorated significantly. He appears distressed, confused, and angry. He's only wearing one shoe and holding the other in his hand. He doesn't realize it, but Jack is in the wrong garage. His car is actually parked in a car park a few blocks away. Moving back to the timeline, the next time we see Jack, it is the following day, Thursday, December 30th. Approximately 21 hours have passed since we saw Jack in the parking garage. He is recorded at 3:36, excuse me, on CCTV footage in the Nemours building, which is in downtown Wilmington. It is believed that Jack spent the night and part of the day in the basement of this large building. It is not known why he was there or whether he had any connection to the building. He's captured on CCTV footage at various points between 3:36 and 8:39 p.m., walking through the corridors. At some point, he acquires a black hooded sweatshirt and he can be seen wearing it. At 8:39, he exits the building, and at 8:41, the last confirmed sighting of Jack is captured on the CCTV footage of a nearby hotel as he walks by into the cold December night with his hood pulled up. There is an unconfirmed witness sighting of Jack at 11 p.m. that night. Someone shared a taxi to Newark with a man they believe was Jack. At 9:56 a.m. the next morning, Jack's body is found at the landfill in Newark, 14 miles from Wilmington, the last place Jack was seen alive, adding credence to the witness report. Through diligent investigative work and DNA sampling, the trash surrounding Jack's body is traced back to the city of Newark, and a particular trash dumpster is identified as one which contained Jack's body, which was emptied with the trash and carried to the landfill. According to the attendant at the parking garage, Jack told her that this briefcase had been stolen. She asked him where the ticket was for his car, and he said the ticket was in his briefcase, and just kept repeating, "My briefcase has been stolen, it's been stolen." Jack seems agitated, distressed, and very vulnerable. Interestingly, he does not ask the attendant to contact the police or give any further details of the theft. He also does not report that he is unable to locate his car. I think it is interesting and significant that he does not ask for further assistance. I also believe that if the parking attendant had contacted the police and kept Jack in her office until they arrived, he probably wouldn't have died. So what happened to Jack Wheeler? Broadly speaking, there are three main theories which attempt to account for what happened. These are murder for hire, or a contract type killing, a random mugging or assault which escalated to murder, or accidental death, or death by misadventure. On consideration of the available evidence, it is my belief that Jack, unfortunately, passed away due to accidental death or death by misadventure, and that there was no one else involved in his death. But let's explore the evidence for and against each theory. Number 1, murder for hire. First, let's consider the murder for hire contract killing theory. There are a couple of paths you can go down with this angle. The first, and perhaps most obvious, is related to Jack's occupation, his past employment, and his government connections. As we have already discussed, Jack was an extraordinary man with an illustrious career, working for a number of presidential administrations, a White House aide during the Bush administration, and at the time of his death, was employed as a contractor working in the area of cybersecurity. Is it possible that Jack had made powerful enemies during his political career? Or perhaps he was targeted due to his current occupation? The Unsolved Mysteries episode about Jack's death is called The Washington Inside Murder, which gives the impression that Jack's death was connected to his career in Washington or his status as a government insider. In this episode, his family intimate that they believe Jack was the victim of a murder for hire and have stated that no one has come forward with information despite the large reward available, and that this may be because they have already been paid off. So there is the government security angle. Secondly, there is the dispute Jack was involved in with his neighbor over the building of a house in historic Battery Park. Jack was reportedly very fired up about this, and we can assume with some degree of certainty that Jack was responsible for the arson attack at this house on the 28th of December. Is it possible that this dispute had escalated to the point where someone ordered Jack's murder, perhaps in retribution for the arson attack? I think it is unlikely that someone was hired to murder Jack because of his career or the housing dispute for the following reasons. If Jack was the victim of a murder for hire, I would expect his manner of death to involve a gunshot, poison, or possibly a knife, depending on the type of hit ordered. The autopsy showed that Jack's injuries were reportedly consistent with a beating, though I will dispute this conclusion shortly. Jack, however, was not shot or stabbed or poisoned, which makes me think it was not a professional hit. Also, if you look at Jack's behavior and demeanor in the days leading up to his death, he seems confused, distressed, and he is acting in a bizarre, nonsensical manner. This, along with the knowledge that he had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, a severe mental illness, indicates to me that he was possibly in a mental health crisis. There is a lot of inconsistent evidence which just does not fit with him being the victim of a targeted attack. In addition to this, in the days leading up to Jack's death, he traveled extensively. An assassin would need to know where to find their victim, and if Jack was a target, it would have been easy to find out where he was spending Christmas, and the hit could have been carried out there. Once Jack leaves the family home, he travels a lot, and his facial behavior is inconsistent, making it difficult for someone to track him down. For these reasons, I don't think Jack was the victim of a murder for hire or a contract killing.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So if it wasn't contract killing, then we got to look at the possibility of a random mugging. The second theory is that Jack was the victim of a random mugging or assault which turned deadly. Now, I have a few problems with this theory, too, but let's look at the evidence which supports it. The autopsy report that Jack's injuries were consistent with a beating. Jack claimed to have been the victim of a robbery himself on two separate occasions. First, when he emailed work on December 29th to say his wallet, badge, and phone were stolen. And secondly, later that day when he told the parking garage attendant that his briefcase had been stolen. Additionally, on December 29th, when he went into his local pharmacy, he requested and accepted a ride to Wilmington with two unknown persons. When we see Jack again on CCTV in the wrong parking garage, he's distressed and holding one of his shoes. Is it possible that he was assaulted by the unknown persons who gave him a lift? Did they steal his briefcase? If that is the case, was Jack unfortunate enough to be the victim of two separate attacks? One in which he walked away and one in which he was killed? I think, however, it has been confirmed that the police were able to trace the unknown persons who gave Jack a ride, and we can assume that they were ruled out of the investigation early on. The major piece of evidence which contradicts the theory of a mugging gone wrong is that Jack was found with many valuables. One of the biggest issues with the mugging gone wrong theory is that Jack was found with many of his valuables still about his person. He was still wearing an expensive Rolex wristwatch, he was wearing his West Point ring, and he still had cash on him. It's unlikely a mugger would miss such valuables. It would also be unusual for a mugger to dispose of the body this way. Typically, when a mugging goes wrong and the victim ends up dying, the assailant will leave the body where it falls. Disposing of a body was not part of their plan. If Jack was not targeted by a hired contract killer or the victim of a robbery, then what happened to him? The final theory, and the one which I believe to have the most merit, is that Jack died an accidental death. He was not murdered. We have already discussed Jack's bizarre behavior in the days preceding his death. It is possible that Jack was experiencing a mental health crisis. We know that he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Is it possible that Jack stopped taking his medications over Christmas? We know Jack had memory issues and was very forgetful. It is possible that he simply forgot to take his medication. With pharmacies and doctors' surgeries being closed for the Christmas period, it is possible Jack ran out of medication. Perhaps he forgot to collect his prescription in time. Perhaps he deliberately chose to refrain from taking his medication over Christmas so he could partake in a few Christmas drinks. Psychiatric medication can interact with alcohol, and it is not unprecedented for people to stop taking their meds to allow themselves to drink alcohol. I also think it is possible that Jack lost his medication when he lost his briefcase. The briefcase is an interesting factor in this case, and it is worth spending a couple of minutes considering its path. The briefcase itself has never been located. On the 29th of December, Jack told a parking garage attendant that his briefcase had been stolen. But in CCTV footage of him earlier that day as he entered the pharmacy, Jack did not have his briefcase with him then either. We could assume he had the briefcase with him when he left the family home after Christmas and went to work in DC for the day. I can only assume he had the briefcase with him while he was at work, as he probably couldn't work without it. He then left DC for Delaware, traveling by train, and I think it is possible that he left the briefcase on the train or at the station. If his medication was inside, then Jack is now without any pills. That night, the arson incident occurs at Jack's neighbor's house, and I believe we can safely assume that Jack was responsible for this. This arson incident is another sign that Jack's mental health might be unraveling. He accidentally loses his phone at the scene, and I think Jack realized this mistake as soon as he got back home. In a fit of rage and frustration, he throws around some things in the kitchen, upending a pot plant and knocking stuff off the kitchen counter onto the floor. It is this disturbance to the scene, which his neighbor later discovers and believes to be evidence of a break-in. If you remember, the day Jack's body was found, the local police were already en route to his house, responding to a potential break-in reported by his neighbor, who had a key to his house. The report of that break-in at Jack's home increased suspicions about the nature of Jack's death, and I believe that this led the police and medical examiner to conclude that the death was suspicious before an adequate investigation had been completed. It is interesting that when Jack realizes he has left his phone at the scene of the arson incident, he emails his work the following day to say that his phone has been stolen. He later tells the garage attendant his briefcase has been stolen. Perhaps he is beginning to get confused between what he has lost or misplaced and thinks it has been taken. Jack does not report any of these apparent thefts to the police, nor does he inform his wife. I think it is interesting that Jack consistently fails to ask for help. I think this is another sign of his deteriorating mental state. He's no longer able to think rationally and logically about his situation. Jack reportedly had a very bad memory. It was not unusual for him to forget where he had parked his car. His wife and daughter jokingly report that Jack would sometimes return home in a taxi because he couldn't find his car. And on the night of the 29th of December, Jack turns up in the wrong parking garage looking for his car. He has also lost his briefcase and left his phone in his neighbor's yard. I think there's a strong possibility that Jack actually had the beginnings of Alzheimer's disease or dementia. I think the early warning signs, such as the forgetfulness, have been missed by Jack's family. He had been a very intelligent and successful man. It would not be easy to acknowledge that Jack was possibly deteriorating. On the days before Jack's death, he is spotted once again on CCTV footage in the Nemours building. He apparently spends the majority of the day and possible night in the labyrinth basement of the building, which appears to have a huge network of underground tunnels. In the Unsolved Mysteries episode about the case, it states that Jack had no connection with this building, but I have since learned from an article published in Delaware Today that it housed his solicitor's offices and Jack attended and asked to speak to his lawyer, but then left after waiting only a short time. During this time, Jack does not ask anyone else for help. He does not try to find a phone or take any action to extricate himself from the situation. I think this is a huge warning sign that Jack is no longer thinking or behaving rationally, and his mental capacity is seriously questionable. On the 30th December at 8:39, Jack exits the Nemours building wearing a black hoodie that he acquired from somewhere. He's spotted at 8:41 by a hotel camera as he walks away into the cold, dark night. What Jack did and where he went from here is unknown. What we do know is that he was present in a garbage dumpster on the morning of December 31st when it was emptied by commercial trash truck driver Mike Grabowski and transported to the Cherry Island landfill. Tragically, it is not unusual for people to voluntarily climb into dumpsters for warmth and a sheltered place to sleep for the night. In fact, it has become such an issue that waste management companies have worked with homeless shelters to educate about the dangers of sleeping in a dumpster. Too many people are crushed to death or seriously maimed by doing this every year. The truck driver who emptied the dumpster stated that it was not unusual for someone to pop up at the top or climb out of the side door. He stated, "We call them howlers because that's what they do. They jump up and wow, wow, sometimes you can hear them, sometimes you can't." I think that is a very sad but telling statement. The average temperature in Delaware in December is 30.4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is pretty cold. I think Jack probably voluntarily climbed in the dumpster to escape the cold and find some shelter. It is also not unusual for persons with Alzheimer's disease to hide themselves upon getting lost. Research into missing persons has noted that individuals with disease like dementia and Alzheimer's disease may deliberately conceal themselves and through confusion and fear fail to ask for help or respond to the voices of people calling their names during searches. As has been clearly stated online by waste management companies, if a person is inside a dumpster when it is emptied into a trash truck, there is a significant risk of injury or death. If we look at the type of injury sustained by Jack, the autopsy report mentions fractured ribs and punctured lungs. The cause of death is listed as blunt force trauma. These injuries are consistent with being crushed by a trash truck. The medical examiner listed Jack's manner of death as a homicide. I believe this is incorrect, and I think the error was likely made because the autopsy was unusually performed the day Jack's body was found. The police were under the impression that the death was suspicious, especially given the report of the break-in at Jack's house, and they conveyed this impression to the medical examiner, who investigated Jack's injuries in light of this suspicion. I think it would have been beneficial for a second autopsy to have been performed by an impartial examiner to see what they report. Whatever happened to Jack on that cold December night, it was a tragedy and a desperately sad end for such a fascinating, successful man. The case of Jack Wheeler has echoes of the disappearance of a British young man named Corey McKeague, who disappeared aged 23 and was believed to have been possibly crushed to death by a similar dumpster. His remains are believed to be in Barton Mills landfill, but searches have failed to uncover his body. There are also some similarities to the bizarre death of Canadian student Lisa Lamb, who was found deceased in the water tank atop the Cecil Hotel in downtown LA. Lisa, like Jack, had bipolar disorder and was also captured behaving bizarrely on CCTV in the hours before her death. Officially, the case into Jack Wheeler's death is still open. Delaware Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward for information leading to the arrest of subjects responsible for the death of John Jack Wheeler. If you have any information about the death, you can please contact the Delaware Crime Stoppers at 1-800-TIP-3333 or go to DelawareCrimeStoppers.com or, of course, Unsolved.com. And with that, give me your thoughts on this case in the comments section below. And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. And of course, we'd like to thank our sponsor, NordVPN. As always, we'll see you in our next episode.